You're listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Tolinsky and Wes Boss.
Welcome to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Today, we've got another TypeScript episode for you. We're going to go through all of the TypeScript tooling and explain what they do. What are type checkers? What are compilers? What are transpilers? How do you run Node when you're writing TypeScript? What are build tools? What's the difference? What about the configs? What about VS Code? Whole bunch of stuff. Today, we are sponsored by three awesome companies. First one is LogRocket, JavaScript Session Replay. Second one, Magic Bell. They do notifications integration for your application. And FreshBooks, JavaScript Session. Oh, no. FreshBooks does not do JavaScript Session Replay. FreshBooks does cloud accounting. Well, we'll talk about all of them partway through the episode. With me, as always, is Mr. Scott Tolinsky. How are you doing today, Scott?
Hey, what's up? I'm doing much better here. Just hanging out, trying to get back to work now. Yeah, I had a couple of days off from sick day stuff, and then now back in action.
Awesome.
BIA.
BIA. All right. Well,
everybody says MIA, but nobody says BIA.
That's true.
What's up with that?
Everybody goes BIMIA, but who's back in action? Backstreet's back. That's about the only one that comes back.
Yeah. Who? Shady's back.
Oh, yeah. Shady's back. Baby's got back. Okay. There's quite a bit of backs.
We got backs. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, so we both have been doing, like, when did we do our first TypeScript episode? I feel like I've been writing TypeScript I was looking back on it for about 2 years now. I think you've been doing it even longer than that. And I feel like we've got a pretty good handle on all the tooling, as well as, like, there's been a lot of movement in tooling around TypeScript lately. So I thought we'd just go through all of that. So let's get into the first one here. We've got tooling, which is tooling. Type checkers and compilers. So there's two different sort of, like, if you need to turn your JavaScript or your TypeScript into JavaScript so that it can run, because at the end of the day, you write TypeScript, and TypeScript is an author time environment. By the time it actually runs, it gets converted into JavaScript. And there's kind of two things around that. First, we have type checkers, and then we have compilers or transpilers. So a type checker is something that will check that your types are correct. So it will not allow you to go on to the next step, which is compile it into JavaScript, unless your types have no errors. So if you are passing in an object into a function that is not the right type, or you have broken one of your rules, like you have an implicit any and you've turned on the option to have no implicit any, or you are trying to do math with a string or any of the TypeScript rules, that is where the type checker is going to fail you or give you information. Now, those errors that you see pop up in your VS Code, that is because VS Code or whatever editor you're using is constantly running the official TypeScript checker, which is called TSC, TypeScript checker. It's constantly rerunning it against your current file. And every time you make a change, it will try to rerun it and tell you of any possible issues. Now, when you compile your entire project, TypeScript will go ahead and run it on all of your files instead of just the current one.
Yeah, and you could even get VS Code to run it on all of your files at all the time, but it is not great for your CPU, your battery, or any of that stuff. Hey, and actually, Wes, you know what? Now that I say that, you know, I was just talking about my woes of battery life. I have that setting turned on. I'm wondering.
I'm just wondering if that was it.
If that is part of my problem.
So that is a really good example of why developers still need a strong machine. Because you think about, like, what do we need? A text file and a browser? Like, why do we need these, like extremely expensive, high horsepower machines? And the TypeScript checker itself is very resource intensive. And that's why it only has it on the current file. But there is a setting in VS Code that will allow you to turn it on for the entire project, and it will continually check your entire project.
Off.
I wonder if that's it. But, like, it doesn't necessarily matter when you're plugged in. But I guess when you are mobile, it is an issue. So that could be, I'm curious.
And I was mobile. That was my big beef. Yeah.
I was just looking for what the actual experimental flag was. It's typescript.tsserver.experimental.enableprojectdiagnostics true. Mm-hmm. And that will turn it on. And the top comment under it is, this will kill you, RAM. So it will, which is fine.
Yeah.
If you have lots of RAM, I got lots of RAM.
10,000 gigabytes of RAM in this thing. So,
so that's the, but okay. So there's that. And TSC, it will also do the next thing, which is compile or transpile. I think people use those interchangeably. I generally think of compiling as one language to another language. Like, Babel was a compiler where you compile.
Wait, isn't like that ES6,
ES5? Yeah, that's true. What's the difference then?
I think they are just straight up used interchangeably. I don't know the difference. I don't know if there is. There's probably a technical difference, but people called one thing at one thing another thing. So I don't know if it really matters.
Okay. So TypeScript will do that. However, it is, I believe it is written in JavaScript. And for resource intensive things like that, a lot of people start to move out to lower level languages. Like a lot of Node is written in C++. And now we are starting to see a bunch of these tools written in Rust. And what's the other big, other popular one that a lot of people are writing? Yeah, Go. So a lot of these tools are written in Rust and Go because they are much faster. And then you simply get a JavaScript API to interact with it. So instead of using TSC for transpiling, people generally just use that for type checking. And then when it comes to turning it into JavaScript, they will reach for either TSC. It will do it just fine. Or the big two right now are ESBuild and SWC. ESBuild is written in Rust, I believe.
ESBuild is written in Go.
Okay, SWC is written in Rust. So these are two major projects going on right now that try to are implementing the entire TypeScript transpiler compiler in their native language so that it is extremely fast.
Yeah, I think that's a big point of confusion for a lot of developers getting into this stuff. So I think we should emphasize that when you use things like Babel or ESBuild to compile your TypeScript down to JavaScript, it's not doing the checking for you at all. It's completely ignoring any of that step. And therefore, it's just turning your TypeScript into JavaScript so that the browser can read it. So that says, you know, a lot of people would say then, well, why would I ever even need something like that if that like kind of goes against what the purpose of TypeScript is, right? Isn't TypeScript there to check my stuff? But like you mentioned, people end up just running TSC to then type their checks. In fact, the way that we do it is that we have a process called, I think it's just npm run check or something like that, and it just runs TypeScript, and you can have it, or TSC, you can have it in a watch mode. We actually have it in a what I would think might be a little bit better of a way, because I'm usually not too willy-nilly with the types, so we're constantly making sure everything's up to date, but we have ours run in a GitHub action on PRs and deploys, so therefore any PR that we want to do gets blocked if it is in fact, you know, the types are not correct in that PR. So that's a big thing to be cognizant of, is that it is, you end up having kind of two different ways to do it. You're no longer just using one thing to compile your code. You're using something to compile your code and something else to check it in a completely different process.
Yeah.
It feels like that's a lot of extra overhead, but in practice, it can be, I guess. But
I think you might be saying like, why do you care? Like, who cares if your build takes an extra 10 seconds or 30 seconds. And the benefit comes in your development environment. So you're writing TypeScript and you want live reloading, you want fast turnaround, you want your Node script to restart immediately. That's where it becomes this thing went down from 1 second to 10 milliseconds, and it is much faster. And that immediate feedback loop is extremely nice when you are writing. Like, again, we talk about the olden days before we had, when SAS used to take sometimes 10 seconds to compile a CSS file. And that really, really kills you. Even just like if it takes longer for your eyes to switch back to the browser,
yes.
It's like, it's not annoying, but when you go to the really fast version, you're like, ooh, this is really nice.
And if you have ADHD, that can be just enough to get you thinking about something else completely. I know me, like I would save it, I'd wait for that refresh to happen, and then I'd be like, oh, let me just check Twitter real quick. Next thing you know, you're like totally thrown off your game.
Yeah. So there are also initiatives right now to add type checking to these fast ones. Specifically, SWC is trying to implement type checking as well. I don't know if ES Build, I would assume so. And then also TypeScript, the project themselves, are looking at options on how do we make TSC itself faster? Can we use these things? So I bet in the next year or two, we're going to start to see some of these Rust or Go-based platforms be able to type check as well as transpile. And then you'll be flying.
I don't know if that's a goal of ES Build, to be honest.
No?
I think they, well, I'm going to check their GitHub just to see if anything's been popping off there or anything. People are talking about it.
I couldn't find anything when I was searching for it.
My understanding is that when people were talking about it before, the Evan's answer basically is always, that's not the goal of this project.
Yeah.
The goal of this project is just to be a really fast builder, bundler.
That's true. And honestly, between just type checking as an author and using the transpiler to get my live reloads, it's fine because you can do one big type check at the end of everything to make sure that you are in good shape. But generally, you catch your type checking errors as you author the file because that one file is constantly being reevaluated.
Yeah, and if you have a type issue that's come up because of a file that you're editing in another file, like you edit it like file A and then file F over there has a type problem, then that's a good use case for the TypeScript checker to find that and alert you. But it's also a good indication that you know, there might be a potential issue in the code that TypeScript is actually there to help solve for you. So, you know, at the end of the day, these things, maybe just running it once before you deploy ends up being the nice way to have it.
Mm-hmm. One more tool we talked about is bun.sh. This seems to be something that does it all. It's written in Zig. I think we should have
very pink website.
Maybe we'll have the author of this on the podcast.
Yes.
This is pretty interesting. So there are, I think there's probably even a couple more efforts. Those are the three big ones that I'm aware of at the moment to transpile and compile all of your code. So kind of cool.
We could have him on to talk about Bun, but also Zig. I want to learn about Zig. What is Zig?
Yeah.
I mean,
sounds so cool.
I see their website. Why pick Zig? What's the reason for being like, yeah, Zig, that's what I'm going to hitch my wagon to.
Ziglearn.org. It kind of looks like JavaScript and Python together and a little bit of PHP with their concatenation with dots.
Pub funk. Main, yeah, there is some JavaScripty stuff. There is some Rusty stuff. There's intense types, so you're having to define like what type of string and numbers things are. Yeah, I don't know. Interesting.
Sounds cool. Coolest name of a.
It's got a cool name, kind of. Yeah,
all these things like Go, Rust, Zig, so much cooler than JavaScript. You know.
Yeah. We gotta have a JavaScript branding glow up here. We gotta do something about that. Cold brew script. Well, if you are trying out a language like Zig to compile to your code, you might end up having some bugs in your code because you don't know how to write Zig like me. And that might lead to some stuff where you're pushing some bugs to production. And you know what a great tool to solve production bugs is, Wes, is LogRocket. LogRocket is one of those services that you have to see to believe. That's my fake tagline for them. LogRocket is so good because, you know what, we often debug in the dark, right? You're trying to figure out what the user's seeing. You're trying to piece together breadcrumbs and clues to figure out what the heck is actually happening on the site. But no more guessing, because now you can see what's actually happening with LogRocket. It gives you a scrubbable video replay along with the network request, error logs, and more. All that stuff that you need when you're actually debugging things without having to ask the user for that information. And not only that, but they've started to improve upon LogRocket. They've added some convert, engage, and retain customers, as well as conversion rate different tools to proactively surface issues that impact conversion rates. So a lot of neat stuff coming from LogRocket beyond just solving bugs. It's all around making your users' experience better on your site. So check it out at logrocket.com/syntax. Sign up and you'll get 14 days for free. Thank you so much for LogRocket for sponsoring.
Yes. Some cool stuff. We had a call with them a couple of months ago, and they're showing us some of the stuff they're working on and whatnot. And it's amazing. It's going to be huge for if you are trying to figure out, like, why aren't customers buying or why aren't they as engaged as possible, right? Like, you can take all that steps further.
Yeah, I'm a big fan.
Let's get into the next section. I'm going to call this section server side, or like node-ish, running JavaScript that's not just for the browser, but like if you want to run a node process with that. So the first one is, we've talked about this many times, is Dino. Dino is the effort to, it's a runtime for JavaScript and TypeScript built on V8. So what that means is that they took the engine out of Chrome, much like Node.js did, and then they use it to run it on the server side, as well as giving us a set of additional APIs for common server side things like writing files and network stuff. So we're big fans of Dino here. And one kind of cool thing is they have firsthand support for TypeScript. Yeah, so Dino uses SWC under the hood. And what it does is it doesn't do type checking. It just converts it from TypeScript to JavaScript at runtime for you. So that is all built in, which is really cool. There are lots of other tools available for Node if you want to author your application in TypeScript and just have a really nice experience. One thing I do, so for my TypeScript course that I'm working on, I just want to have like quick little scripts where you have a TS script, and just like you use Node hello.js, I want to be able to do exactly that for things. So I tried them all out. And the one that I use is called ESNO. And that there's another one, I think it's ESMO. They're both by the same author, and they're for running ESM modules and common JS modules. And it works great. It just compiles them very quickly. It uses ES build under the hood. So a lot of these tools will be using either SWC or ES build. And just converts it and runs it, and is super quick. Big fan of how quick that is. And believe me, I tried them all. There's no config or anything like that.
Yeah, and you should know that ES build is extremely fast. If you've never used it, it's shockingly fast. So just a shout out there, because you might be thinking, oh, I got to run this compiler before, you know, every single file or whatever. But it's really, you can't even notice. It's faster than you could possibly imagine if you've never used it. So I haven't used any of these tools myself. Actually, Wes, it's very funny because you were just saying, like, I just want to get up and running TypeScript. And with Svelte, you can kind of do that. You just need to install TypeScript into your package.json and then just change the lang to TS in the template. And even that was so much of a barrier to entry for me that I, like, avoided doing it on a project. And I was like, hit this bug that was so stupid. And then I was just like, you know what? Screw it. I'm putting TypeScript into this project. And I did it, and it found the bug in like 3 seconds flat. And I was just thinking, and I'm dumb for not turning this on earlier or just making this effort. I wasted so much more time, you know, with the not initializing the tooling. So, you know, that can definitely be a thing, is barrier to entry here.
It is. And I tweeted about using ESNO. One of the authors of Node was like, should we add something like this to Node? And I was like, I think I would love that. Is it the place for it? I don't know. It's kind of like back in the day, we were like, yeah, add jQuery to the browser. We're trying to say, like, everybody uses this anyway. Just add it to the browser so it's easy for everybody. And I don't know if it's necessarily like the spot for it, because there are a lot of tools around it, but it certainly would be really handy. And
I do think that's one of the better features of Dino too, is just being able to write TypeScript without any startup.
And I a lot of people always like challenge me on this, and I think it's because I build hundreds and hundreds of little things every year, and that out of the box to it running is very important to me. Whereas other people have, like, oh, of course, if you have a larger project, spend a day setting it up and getting it really working really, really well. But when I just want to fetch some JSON, loop over it and console log the results or save some files to it, I write lots and lots of little scripts. And being able to have a barrier-free entry to that, but still have the benefits of using TypeScript is huge for me.
Totally huge, yeah.
So there are also this idea of like register scripts. So back when we had ESM, before Node had ES modules, there was this register script, which is the idea with a register script in Node is that if you run this code first, you'll be able to use modified code in the future without having to set up any config. So CoffeeScript was a really good example where you could use the CoffeeScript register script and then you could just import coffee files like they were normal files. ESM is a really good example, still a really good example. It makes it really easy. You just run this register script before, and usually it's just like node-r, and then you say swc/register, and then you say index.js. And then it will run the register script first, and then you can go ahead and willy-nilly use any TypeScript or anything that you want after the fact. So both SWC and ESBuild they both have a register available for you. So if you are building a Node app that is written in TypeScript, these are probably ones that you want to take a good look at. If it's a quick script, just use ESNo. But in fact, ESBuild register is what ESNo uses under the hood. So again, these tools all come back to either using SWC or ESBuild to run the code for you.
Did you see who made ESNo?
Yeah, it's Anthony. What's his name?
Antfu. Yeah.
Antfu. Is his name Anthony? Anthony Fu.
His name comes up like constantly. It's like almost like every time I open up a project.
I'm pretty sure we talked about him on the last podcast. We should have him on the podcast. How are you so prolific?
Yeah, seriously. It's just great stuff. Vtest and this and all sorts of stuff.
I was saying Vtest, ESBuild, honky doodle. Unreal. Just look at this contribution graph. Yeah. Wow. Unreal. What else do we have? TS Node. TS Node uses TSC. So it uses the TypeScript compiler under the hood. They are now adding a --- SWC flag so that it will be faster.
Okay.
And then they also, so part of the reason why people moved away from TS Node is because it was slow, because it always did a type check. That is no longer the case. So TS Node is also a very good option there. Dino has Node compat now. This is kind of cool. So if you have a Node script and you're importing from like import whatever from Lodash, you can now run those scripts in Node, and the compatibility for Node is very, very good in Dino, but it does not support TypeScript Node scripts. So someone's like, just use Dino. And I was like, I tried, and they have a whole page on the Dino docs about using TypeScript with using Node compat, but it doesn't work with TypeScript. So that's getting into the weeds.
That's a whole thing for me, because it's like, that's the reason why I'm not picking Dino for any of this stuff, because there is a little bit of a wall there between Dino and Node itself, right? I mean, it's not as plain as just picking up something like ESNode to run it, or yeah, even exactly. TSNode. Yeah.
Eventually it will be, because almost all of the Node APIs have been replicated in Dino APIs, but they're still smoothing out that process if you're using TypeScript.
But even then, you have to learn some Dino stuff, like you have to learn the whole permissions model in Dino. You have to learn the whole imports business in Dino. It's not like...
What I'm reading is that you can use Node imports and will map them to the URLs or to your Node modules folder. So like, I don't know why you would... I'm sure there are some situations for that. I just can't think of a good use case right off the top of my head here.
Huh. Okay. So the last one that you have here is WDS. I've not seen of or heard of this thing before, but it says it's a reloading dev server side for TypeScript projects. That seems like something that I want. I kind of have this thing for ESBuild where I have like auto reloading sort of thing for ESBuild, but I had to write the script myself. I had to get it all set up. It wasn't super turnkey or anything like that. This seems like it's a layer on top of SWC or ESBuild.
Yeah, this seems like NodeMon for TypeScript. So like if let's say you have like a traditional Node app that you want to restart every time you make a change, if that's the case, then you have to like compile and then pipe that into NodeMon. And then NodeMon will have to see the change, which is not a bad way to do it. It's pretty quick. But
does have a watch mode.
It does
have a watch mode. So you can definitely just tell it to watch a directory. And that was added not somewhat recently, maybe about a year ago, but it's fine. Yeah. I just know that like anytime you're getting into more intense ESBuild stuff, you're writing your own script file kind of.
Yeah. This one says using require.extensions. So this probably figures out which ones to recompile because it can scaffold out the require tree. I'm assuming that's what it is. It uses, again, like we said with all of this, it will use either SWC or ESBuild under the hood. So again, those two tools are the heart of everything we're doing. And like, again, we said Bun is going to be that third one, I bet.
Yeah, ESBuild sort of rocked the web dev world from usage in Vite, which has kind of also rocked the web dev world to this kind of stuff. I mean, it's amazing how much, how shockingly fast in just what kind of a difference that can make in your world. Let's actually take a quick break to talk about one of our sponsors today. This is the sponsor with the Magic Bell, also known as Magic Bell. Wes, do you want to talk about Magic Bell?
Yes, Magic Bell is a notification inbox for your project. What if you are building an app and you need to notify your users? What do you got to do? Well, you might think, I'll just have an array of notifications and I'll push to that, and then I'll email them and I'll send a notification to their phone, and then we'll do it in the little notification bell inside their app. And oh, before you know it, it's pretty complex. Or people are saying, I'm getting too many emails from you, and I only want to get emails about this certain thing. You're like, oh my goodness, like this is a whole app in itself, just sending notifications to your actual user. So what Magic Bell does is they have a whole API that you can integrate it right into your application. You can do smart notifications. So like, let's see, somebody sees a notification in the app, then don't email them about it as well. They're using your app at the current time, right? You can send push notifications in app. They have preferences. You can batch them, which is really smart. So I don't know, somebody gets 8 likes on one of their items in it. You don't want to send them 8 different notifications. Maybe you should batch those together. They honestly have it all. The docs and the API integration into your app looks fantastic, which is pretty, pretty cool. They have 100 MAUs, monthly active users. So try it out in your application. Use coupon code SYNTAXFM. That's going to get you 10% off first 12 months. Again, that's magicbell.com. Thank you, Magic Bell, for sponsoring.
Sick. Okay, so we've talked a little bit about type checkers, compilers. We talked about server-side stuff. Let's get into build tools. Now, for me, it's funny because like I always run into like, what is the difference here between a compiler and a build tool? I would say like at a higher level, what a build tool just does more. It utilizes compilers to take control to run maybe a development server, to build, to reload, those types of things. Is that what you would say as well, Wes?
Yeah, generally... what these tools do are sort of blurring the boundaries between them. And sometimes they do a lot more than they do everything for you. But generally, I like to think of a build tool as, or I don't even know if it's a build tool, a dev tool. They have a local server. They do hot reloading. They handle more than just JavaScript. So they'll handle images and CSS and all kinds of things like that. And there's kind of two big ones out there right now, or two that I'm pretty fond of. And I keep going back between them both for my TypeScript course. I haven't made a decision yet. There's Vite and there's Parcel. And guess what they use? Vite uses ESBuild.
And
Parcel uses SWC. Yeah. So they are both smoking fast. Parcel 2 specifically implemented SWC. So sometimes you'll see graphs of people saying like, this is 1,000 times faster than Parcel. It's not the case anymore. and they both do like local servers. They both do like, if you want to do a local tunnel, actually, I don't know if Vite does this, but Parcel does really well. If you like, you want to send somebody a URL to something you're working on locally. Like sometimes I'll send.
Oh yeah, it does. Yeah. It's just like a easy config option. Yeah.
So good. These tools are fantastic. I honestly don't, in my experience, the Vite has just worked more often, and Parcel has a few more little edge casey features. One is which I use a lot, which is multiple inputs. So for my course, I have 17 different index.html files. And in those HTML files, you can just use script source equals whatever.ts. And it will say, .ts, you say, let me compile that for you, or .scss, yeah, or whatever. If you just import them normally, like you were in HTML, it will compile them and do live reloading and all that good stuff for you. And one thing Parcel does that Vite does not do is multiple entry points right now, where I can just say start.html and it will serve all of the HTML files up, which is like not a use case for most people, but for somebody building tutorials, it is.
Yeah, that's like specifically like when you would use that. You know what, Tony? Yeah. These are the best these tools have ever been. You know, they're straight up the best it's ever been. And a lot of times now when people are talking about getting rid of compilers, I wonder, it's like, man, the compiler or even the build tool step that we're so used to has now become so nice and fast and streamlined. It's like, do we actually need to get rid of these things? I don't know if I'm ever going to want to get rid of these things because they're so helpful all the time.
Yeah.
And they're fast. They're easy.
There will always be a place for these types of tools. And we should also say, like, if you are using a framework like Next.js, Next.js has their own build tool built into Next.js. And under the hood, it uses SWC to compile your TypeScript. And it uses Webpack to do all your loaders. And that's not really anything you need to know, because I would put Next.js on the same level as Vite and Parcel because it just works. And then what does Svelte use? Svelte uses Vite?
Svelte Kit uses Vite, yeah.
Svelte Kit, sorry, yes.
Yeah, and Svelte has its own compiler, yeah.
Awesome. Other tools, so Bun is, we talked about Bun being like a compiler, transpiler, but it also aims to be a development tool, local server with live reloading. And then there's also Rome that has been being worked on for a little while now. So those are two to watch out for.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what becomes of Rome and Bun. Like, where do those end up fitting in? Because it is right now, like, kind of feels like a lot of people have, you know, chosen their build tool, you know, in terms of these really popular stacks. So are these tools going to be able to gain market share when big projects are already kind of cemented into?
I think so.
You do?
I've changed my dev tooling like 1,000 times since I've started.
Yeah, I kind of have too.
And
yeah.
Like, honestly, if something is faster, and I think it's getting easier and easier because I'm not writing Vite specific code or Parcel specific code.
You're right. It's getting easier to change.
And we're writing as close to standards JavaScript as we possibly can, with the exception of JSX, like its own thing. But most of these, like TypeScript itself supports JSX, right? And all of these compilers support JSX as well, which is pretty cool. All right. So those are the build tools. Let's talk about configs. So if you are writing a TypeScript project, you've got a lot of configs that you can. We specifically have two main ones. There's tsconfig and TypeScript ESLint. Let's talk about tsconfig. What is the tsconfig file, Scott?
Tsconfig is basically the source of truth for whatever TypeScript is doing. It tells TypeScript what kind of features from TypeScript you want to be using, how strict to make a TypeScript, whether or not it's checking your inis or implicit inis, but it's also checking your imports so that you don't have to do that import asterisk from sort of business, so you can import things as a default import. There's a ton of different config. In fact, maybe even Wes, that might be a good hasty treat if we haven't already done that, would be to just like go line by line of all the different config options in a tsconfig file, because there's a lot of stuff in there from your entry points to where you're exiting, maybe some things to ignore, things to remember, or things to, sorry, not to remember, things to ignore, things to include.
Yeah,
there's a whole lot of stuff in there.
Yeah, I was, I'm just going through my notes of my TypeScript course here, and I have like, you don't need to know all of these, but there are maybe 10 or so that are really handy, whether to include JS or to check JS.
Mm-hmm.
The strict ones are kind of important. I have a whole video in my TypeScript course coming up that explains each of these strict options. And generally, you want to turn on... I turn on all the strict options. Do you as well?
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. Yeah.
Pretty... then there's like no implicit any, which is another good one to put in because it could get you in some hot water.
And so many of these feel like they're a pain in the butt when you turn them on, like no implicit any, right? You're going to start getting more errors. But that's TypeScript doing work for you. That's like it solving potential or finding potential issues or making sure that your code is type safe. So
yeah, there's lots of rules in that file. And then there's also like things like how should we output your JavaScript? Should it be CommonJS or should it be ESM? Or should it just be straight bundled like a JavaScript? There is a whole bunch of stuff in there. And generally, you only need, I don't know, in my examples, I generally only have like 5-10 different things, which files to include. And then as you hit possible issues, or as you hit, like, I generally like to turn on as strict as you can. And then as you hit things, you understand what they do. You can turn them on or off or tweak them, however it is you want them.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And maybe even like you can get, get your type code running with some of these options turned off, making it a little less strict, get it all type checked and then turn them on. Then weep as you now have 200 additional errors or whatever. But that to me was a good strategy, especially if I was converting a JavaScript project to TypeScript, was that if you turn it all on at once, it can feel super overwhelming. And if you do kind of a little bit, make it stricter over time, then you can approach some of those in a little bit more measured way.
Next we have TypeScript-ESLint. This is the winner. There used to be one called TSLint that was deprecated in favor of TypeScript ESLint, which is great because your ESLint config that you use for your JavaScript can just be extended and include all of the TypeScript rules. That's what I did with my WestBoss ESLint config. I just took it, extended it, and added all my TypeScript specific errors. So I always like to tell people the TS config has some rules in it that are, I call deal breakers, meaning that if you break any of the rules in your TSLint, the thing will not compile. Whereas TypeScript ESLint, you can set up your project to fail the build if you break one of these linting rules, but these are generally just opinions about how you should structure your code. And if you break one of those opinions, generally teams will fail the build or fail the pull request. But those are things that are, sometimes I have little, in my TypeScript course, I have little red squigglies and I have to explain this is not going to stop your JavaScript from compiling or your TypeScript from compiling, but it is breaking one of the rules that I put in my TypeScript thing. And it's up to you to decide, is that something I care about or not? Like one of the ones that I just finally turned off after having it on for years, which is no use before define. So I would have functions at the bottom of my file and I would use them up top. And I like that because I always like to think like my files are, you open up a file and you say, what does it do at the top? And below it is, how does it do it? And that's the definition of the function. And I always got really annoyed. And I understand how hoisting works in JavaScript. So I've never actually run into an issue. So I finally turned that off and says, yeah, I can use functions before they're defined. I understand how hoisting works. And it's never bit me in the butt.
It's so funny. I don't run into that anymore because with Svelte, you have your script up top, then you have your HTML, then you have your CSS. And it just always kind of feels like I'm defining my stuff in a very specific order nowadays because of how this is set up. And it's like the single file thing. But I'm with you that like I do like my files organized in a very specific way. So that way you kind of know where things are at any given point, right? Even when I was writing React and it was a little bit more freeform, I always had like a very distinct way of organizing everything.
Let's talk about our last sponsor, which is FreshBooks. FreshBooks is cloud accounting for your business. So if you have a small business, a large business, you're a freelancer, you're just somebody earning a little bit of extra money and you need to log your expenses. You need to send out invoices. You need to get paid online. You want to get set up automatic reminders. FreshBooks is that software that you need. I personally have used it for, I think, 13 or 14 years of my business. It's kind of cool because you can go back and like I can look at how much I made in my first year of freelancing and go all the way back to now, see what I'm earning now or see how much I'm spending on a specific category. And it does all of your local taxes, all that good stuff, automatic expense importing right from your credit card, does good stuff. So check it out, freshbooks.com/syntax. You're going to get a 30-day free trial. Thank you, FreshBooks, for sponsoring.
Sick.
All right, let's talk about editors for writing VS Code or for writing TypeScript. It's very tightly bound of people who write TypeScript. I would say a large portion of them use VS Code because they both come from Microsoft. TypeScript is built into VS Code. So if you want TypeScript to work, it just works out of the box. The only thing you might need to do is I hit one little issue and I needed to upgrade the version of TypeScript that was running in VS Code. And that's simply just a setting, or I think there's even a bunch of UI menus to turn it on.
Yeah, I can't really speak to any other editor and how it works with TypeScript, but I've heard, you know, good things about WebStorm. Or some of these other ones. But to me, honestly, VS Code's integration with TypeScript is so stinking fantastic. It works so well. It gives you so many tools to go to your type definitions, to find your type definitions. The only thing I really dislike about it is when you hover over like a type error and it gives you this little tiny box and a giant wall of text that you can't solve sometimes. It would be really great to have a little bit better formatted errors in some ways.
Yeah, the UI of that is tricky, especially when it's like nested like a thousand levels deep.
Yeah, and sometimes VS Code's constantly popping up with boxes and I'm like trying to swat them away like mosquitoes. Get out of here. but you know, it's really great overall. And one of those things that I love is just being able to quickly jump around your code, check for errors and, you know, see everything as you're typing it. I almost never have to wait for the TypeScript compiler in VS Code. And sometimes there are some, like if files are deleted behind the scenes, you need to restart the language server. But other than that, like that's actually a big thing for those of you who use VS Code and maybe you've hit an issue where you're like, I know this is typed correctly. TSC is not showing an error, but VS Code is showing an error. If you fire up your command palette in VS Code and just do restart language server, it will restart the language server and hopefully squash any of that stuff.
Yeah, I know the WebStorm has really good integration as well because WebStorm is an IDE from the ground up, meaning that like the difference between a text editor and an IDE is an IDE is very smart about understanding how your code relates to each other. So you write a function in one file and you import it into another file. Your editor, your IDE, it knows exactly where that is. And that makes clicking through to definitions and whatnot very, very good. Now, VS Code, I'm going to say it's a full-blown IDE for TypeScript and for a lot of other languages as well. And it does a great job at, you can like peek through definitions or one really neat thing is that TypeScript itself has a whole set of refactoring tools built in. So whether you want to rename a function across 18 different files or rename a variable or move a function from one file to another, TypeScript itself has a set of APIs for doing that. And both WebStorm and VS Code, and I'm assuming other editors, surface those APIs via GUI menus, which is really, really cool. And that is extremely handy to if you're refactoring a TypeScript project. You're not doing anytime you do like a find and replace on your code base or find and replace in a file, and you're either, even in JavaScript, you should say, okay, this is probably not the best way to do it because it's simply just based on text where your editor knows better about where you're using these. They're called symbols in JavaScript, whether it's a CSS selector or a function name or a variable name, it's way smarter than find and replace. So you should look into using those tools.
Although sometimes it does get a little obnoxious when you do to rename a symbol and then it just renames it at the import. And you're like, you couldn't have gone further than that. You couldn't have renamed it in the source file.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever never hit that, but.
Oh, man. It doesn't happen every time, but there are times when it happens and I'm just like, don't know what the hiccup was here. Like, I don't know what I did wrong that made you do this. Why are you doing this to me? But here I am and I have to fix your problem now.
It might be the difference between change all occurrences and rename symbol, but it will also update imports if you rename a file, which is so cool as well.
Choice, yes.
Good stuff, good stuff. So I believe that's the end of the list we've got here with all of the TypeScript tooling. There's quite a bit of stuff surrounding it. It makes your life a lot easier. If you've got something that we didn't cover here or some tool that you love to use or some reason why you don't specifically use something, tweet us at SyntaxFM. We'll retweet it. We love hearing those things. Let's move into the next section, which is some sick picks. This is where we pick things that are sick. I'm going to sick pick something. The Burst toothbrush. There was somebody, I think it was Zach Eaton. Somebody on Twitter was like, sick pick this toothbrush. because he used, I think it was like the new Philips Sonicare or something like that. And he's like, this toothbrush is awesome. Like, you should try it out and sick pick it. And I was like, all right. And he tagged Philips Sonicare to send us one. and they didn't reply. But this other company, Burst, was like, we'll hook you up. So I previously had sick pick the Fairy Will toothbrush, which is like an awesome one on Amazon. It uses a lithium battery. You charge the thing like once a month or once every 2 months, something like that, which is great. So you don't have to have a dock for it on your thing. You just plug it in every couple months and you're good to go. So I've been a big fan of that Fairy Wheel one, but this other one, the Burst, this thing has been awesome so far. It's just got three different modes. It will stop when you need to switch parts of your mouth. It's pretty, pretty cool. I'm a big fan of it. So check it out. It's burstoralcare.com. So they did send it to me for free. I have to tell you that, but I've been pretty happy about it. We have, I have a toothbrush upstairs where our bedroom is, but then I also have one downstairs where like in our, like in the morning, I'll use the downstairs one. And at night I use the one upstairs. So it's nice to have, electronic toothbrushes on both spots. So I don't have to use
you
the
old
school.
You got two toothbrushes?
Yeah.
Man, that is some ritzy stuff. You got two toothbrushes.
Two toothbrushes. My dentist does not like that I use an off-brand toothbrush because they are like, you have to get the Oral-B one. Like, go to Costco, get the Oral-B one. And I was like, those things suck. Like, you got to charge it every week. And like, you got to have this like disgusting dock on your and plugged in all the time. And it falls over. And like, I'm like, there's better versions of it. And then so I told them, yeah, I got this one on Amazon, and then they put it in my file. And the last time I went to the dentist, they're like, "So you're using an Amazon toothbrush, hey?" And like shaming me.
So let's talk about that toothbrush. I love how those conversations at the dentist always come up. That's really funny. I'm going to sick pick something that I've sick picked before, but this thing is really fantastic in our household, and I cannot stop talking about how great it is. It's this Tony Box, T-O-N-I-E. I lost my place. It's a Tony Box. It's this box that is so cool. I mean, this has got to be one of the coolest little thing for kids in the entire world here. What this is, it's a speaker that kids can have, and it can tell them stories, and you buy these little figurines for the top of it, and they have tons and tons of stories baked into each of these figurines, and the child will put the figurine that they want, and they can smack the side of the box to change the next track. And let me tell you, not only, like, both of our kids love this thing, but it has made Landon into some sort of like fact monster. It is so insane. We bought him some like we have some like fun story ones, but we have some nature ones too for him. So he'll be like, "Dad, did you know that this this animal does this and this and this. And we'll just be like, that's not true. And then we'll look it up. And he's like 100% dead on every single time. He's like telling us animal facts nonstop now. And he'll listen to this thing to fall asleep. We got it for him because he had a hard time being away from us. He like kind of wanted mom or dad like with him when he was going to bed. And we got to have some time away from the kids occasionally. So we put on this Tony box and it would just read him a story. And this thing is just incredible. The quality is amazing. The app is amazing. There's a huge variety. He gets all his, either his Paw Patrols and whatever. We like this thing so much. We're buying a second one for Brooklyn. And so that she'll be able to have some Peppa Pig in her room now. So.
Oh, man.
She's going to lose her mind when she gets it. And so I'm very excited about that.
So as soon as you explain what this was, you're like, you buy these like little plastic characters and you put them on top of the box and they play different songs. And I was like,
stories, songs.
Oh, stories. Yeah. I was like, there's no way that the songs are in the person. They're probably just streaming from the internet, right?
Right. I was trying to figure that out.
I was like, how do you hack it? And so there's already I'll link to it in the show notes. Somebody figured out how to hack the NFC so you can get all of the Tonys.
Oh, Toonies. No, don't do that. Support this company. They make good stuff. That's funny.
Hacking an NFC toy with Chameleon Mini. Chameleon Mini looks like a
little
NFC breadboard.
Yeah.
I love that stuff. It's funny. Yeah, obviously buy it, but I just, whenever I have kids' toys that do things, I'm always just like, how does this work? And how can I hack it? All right. I will shamelessly plug my upcoming TypeScript course. Go to westboss.com/courses. It should probably be out in the next month or two. So it won't be out by the time you listen to this, but get ready for it. If you are saying, oh, I'd like to get really good at TypeScript, or I've been meaning to check it out, or I've tried a couple things here or there, I'm not totally comfortable with it, this is going to be the course for you. Check it out. Westboss.com/courses. Get ready for it.
Strap yourself in. Yeah, check it out. leveluptutorials.com. And you can sign up and save 25% on the annual subscription. We're doing a huge redesign, which is going to include a lot of new features, a big reorganization of everything, and just a clear path to like learning paths and all sorts of stuff. I have a lot of fun stuff that we'll be showing off about that. So sign up today and you'll save 25%. Get in before the rate goes up when we launch our new features and redesign. And you can get access to every single course that we have, which is a new course every single month, from mini courses from myself, like the latest one on exploring browser APIs, as well as a lot of courses from industry experts on various topics from accessibility to GitHub Actions and so much more. So check it out, leveluptutorials.com. We would love to have you as a member. Thank you.
Awesome. That's it. Thanks everybody for tuning in. We'll catch you on Friday.
Peace.
Peace.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.